Hi, this is Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings. Today, we're talking with a rock and roll superstar. His name is Gavin Rossdale. He is from the band Bush, which got together in the early 90s. What was it, Gavin, about 92, 94 that you guys, the band Bush
92,
formed?
92, I think, yeah, 92.
And you're with another band before that. You had done Midnight was the name of a band and some other bands.
Yep, I did two other bands. I did one band, Midnight, when I first began, and then I did another band, which kind of finding out what sort of band I wanted to be in. And then everyone left, and I formed Bush.
Full Bush. I like the sound of it. So you, I mean, what got you into rock music? What got you into this industry?
Initially, a desperate desire to avoid all forms of traditional work. And I was thinking, what can I do with my life that is nothing to do with being a deadbeat? So I decided to be a deadbeat musician for many years, unsigned, failing miserably, and eating more humble pie than I knew possible, and faced more rejection than anyone should go through, but weirdly tenacious and just held on and just, I don't know, the very things that held me back became the very things that made me, such things like my voice. You know, I first began as learning how to sing. So, yeah, the thing is that when I began to write songs and write words, I felt a great connection to that. You know, it was like, felt really good, like having a tap, an emotional tap. You can just like let the pressure off by just writing stuff down. And I was surprised at how giving myself a voice was a really beneficial thing for me. You know, when I was growing up, people talk about tell your truth, speak in your own voice, all that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, when we were kids, that didn't happen. You know, you get kicked around and called by Rossdale this, Rossdale that, really impersonal and hard and cold in English. So the writing became something that was a really great pressure valve.
Did you write poems first, or did you always just start off writing songs?
No, I'd write songs. I studied English at school, so I'd write poems, but I never really understood poems that were super esoteric. And like, I remember we had a poetry assignment from school, and I wrote the poem about the winos that I would always see on my way home from the tube station for the metro. And I'd see the same guys every day, and they just sit there and they drink the special brew, which is the really strong cider, a strong beer in England, and then anything they could drink, but they drink the special brew, and that was always like, wow. And I saw them every day, so I'd chat with them and talk to them, so I wrote my first poem was about the wino. And when I went to school, it was a bit like they were like, oh, we're not expecting it to sort of real life, not meant to be gritty, sort of meant to be, I wandered lonely as a cloud, you know. So the poetry that I got into, Ted Hughes, people like that, kind of spoke of a darkness and a melancholy that I connected to. So I love, you know, words. I consider, out of all these mad things I've done in my life, I consider myself primarily a songwriter and just a writer. So words are important to me. So yeah, that's what happened. I got into it for all the wrong reasons, but actually it was one of those beautiful things because it brought something out in me.
Now, when I first heard when you and Gwen were married a number of years ago and you had Kingston and Zuma, I was wondering what was the meaning behind those names? And now I've got the guy right here. How did you come up with the names Kingston and Zuma? There must be a story.
Kingston was when I was with Gwen, we'd been in Jamaica and we held on to the name for 6 years. But we were in Jamaica when she's working on her Rocksteady record. And we went through Jamaica and I don't know how it came up, but I think she said to me at some point, that'd be such a great name. Do you like it? I said, yeah. And we didn't tell anyone and kept it quiet for 6 years. Because now we do come across a few Kingstons here and there. Zuma was, you know, it was something, Zuma Beach, beautiful beach. Zuma has a Neil Young record, which has Cortez the Killer on it. For me, one of my favorite songs of all time. And it was just, again, something was in the air. Someone suggested it to Gwen and something, we were talking about it and had lots of different names. And the Zuma for the Neil Young was beautiful for me because I could sneak that little reference in. And I can't remember why she liked it, but that was it. It was a beautiful name, and it's so evocative, and it's that beach and that space and that beauty. And he's an amazing kid. So luckily, they've all lived up to their names.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering, are they following in Dad's footsteps? I mean, Dad and Mom are singers, performers, entertainers. Do they show any inclination towards the same industry
Right.
as you?
Yeah, unfortunately, the older two are really big musicians, really good guitar players. They're currently vying for the position of best guitar player in the house. So,
Wow.
like, I can feel them snapping on my heels. They're really good, better than I was, certainly better than I was at their ages. And one is a singer-songwriter, more country. That's the younger one, Zuma. And Kingston's much more kind of rock, melancholy, plaintive.
How about a family album, you know, the Rossdale Boys? You and the kids together.
Yeah, the Rossdale Four. Yeah, negative to that. They wouldn't do it. There is, you know, I mean, I'm very aware that this time for them is all about their independence from me. So, like, I don't even help them that much. They, if they ask me for help, I give it, but it's difficult. I don't, you've probably got loads of kids, but, you know, they don't want too much from me.
Just
So,
two.
I hope you know about them all. But they, you know, that concept of like, I don't know how it's for you, but they just don't want to hear anything from me except words of encouragement. That's it. If I start saying, "Hey, do you want to? Do we ever try like this?" It's usually the end of the conversation. They just don't like it. They just don't like it. So I don't offer any help.
Gavin Rossdale is our guest from the band Bush. They've got a number of albums out. Their album, The Art of Survival, is the ninth album. And Gavin had said in another interview that this album bucks the trends. We're bucking the trends. What does that mean?
A good point. And I've got to be careful what I say because half of the time I can't remember it and I can't justify it. But bucking the trend, I don't know. I think that maybe that's something to do with, like, I've just done doing a new record now, just finished it. I've been in the studio yesterday. Because that was the only agreement I made to go out on a greatest hits tour. I said, if I can make a record, I won't feel creatively bankrupt to be like, hey, the songs I wrote 20, 30 years ago, you know, it feels like there's one new song on that record that I wrote recently. And the rest of it is sort of like 17 songs that were written a while ago. So it was the weirdest record to put together. Like one song is done. So I've been making a record, but I think that the bucking the trend is keeping it vital. You know, I may have written the best song I've ever written yesterday. And I just like doing everything the wrong way around, not tailing off, not tapering, sort of doing mid-tempo, bloated songs about castles that I live in. You know, it's not about that. It's about keeping it very sort of honest and shooting from the hip, you know, because that's what seems to connect with people. When you, the more honest you can be, and yet in your own words, the more people relate. The weirdest thing is, right, as a songwriter, the deeper I dive into myself to kind of get something that's bugging me or to get a thought out, the more honest and the more personal, the more chance there is of people relating to it. Whereas if you were to try and write something that you think is going to reach people and, you know, and be outside of yourself, it's, for me as a songwriter, it's always been the kind of, that's not been helpful. What's been helpful is be as honest as you can, go inside as you can, be as brutal with yourself. And that brings something out that other people can truly relate to.
That's great. That's great. So, as a songwriter, I want to ask, where is the most unusual place you ever got inspiration to write a song?
So I believe that you sit, like the song I wrote yesterday, I didn't wait for inspiration. I sat down. And I just said, I'm not getting up until I've got what I want. And he's like dog-minded. It's not inspiration. I wasn't in the kitchen going, oh, wonderful. The clouds run away over the hills. Brilliant. You know, how inspiration could be in a jail cell. Or you just, it doesn't matter where you are. It's not external. Inspiration is internal. So I just feel that I, when I want to do it, I just have to be disciplined. So it's more discipline than inspiration, to be honest, for me.
Well, a lot of
So,
you know, rock
yeah.
stars have stories about their fans, and usually in rock, the fans are a little wilder, a little more aggressive. So what would be your most interesting fan story? Did somebody, some groupie crash the tour bus or something?
One time, one in Alabama, and I met a girl who was a fan of the band, grew up listening to Bush, loved Bush, and she worked at a pet store. And I saw this amazing dog, an Akita. You know, they're the Japanese fighting
Yeah, Japanese
dog.
dog, sure.
And I was like, oh my
Shiba
God.
Inu, right? Shiba Inu or an
No,
Inu's
the big
dog.
one, the bigger,
Oh, the
bigger than that. Bigger, the
okay.
big Akita. Akita's it's like the thigh is big. They're very, 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 very serious dogs. They're working dogs, so you have to know about dogs. I'm a dog maniac, you know. So I saw this dog in there, and I said, "You telling me you can just buy this dog? Anyone can buy this poor dog out of PetSmart, and that's it." You know, she goes, "Yeah." So I was like, "Oh, I don't like that. This is a beautiful dog." She goes, "Oh my God, I love this dog. It's just no way I can, you know, I can't afford this dog." And so I think, can we call her mum? She's going to speak to your mum. She was going to college. She was 18, 19, whatever. Called her mum, and her mum goes, "I said, listen, we have this dog, and she loves the dog, and I love the dog, but someone else is going to buy it. Maybe we can't look after it. Would it be okay to buy her the dog? Would you mind? You know, is that okay? Because I'm a responsible dog person, right?" She goes, "No, that'd be amazing. You know, wow." So I bought her the dog, and she called it Bush. And that's it. So he's in Birmingham, Alabama. So that's my fan story for you.
Well, that's great. Now I'm looking at your t-shirt. I see hiragana or katakana. I'm not sure what the characters are, but I know it's from Japan. And you mentioned you know that you had a fondness
Yes.
for the Japanese dog. Do you love Japan too? Is that one of your favorite places to go?
I love Japan. This is just a Japanese t-shirt. I was busy on a tennis court running for my forehand, practicing my work.
Well, for a guy who's, originally from London and now you spend a lot of time, I don't know if you must have a house in the United States as well. Is
All the time,
there a
yeah. That's
difference in, I mean, was it a big culture shock coming when you first came over from London here to
Well,
the
the thing
States?
about it is that I literally am the American dream. I'm the American dream. My life took off, my career took off, and I'm forever in debt to America. I married an American girl. I moved here for love. I have three beautiful boys. I nationalized when they were born because I felt very uncomfortable having a flimsy green card when they're naturalized here, so that me and my boys have English and American dual citizenship. So I love America, and I'm so grateful to be here. So, I mean, the West Coast, I sometimes wish that geographically it was closer so I could go back to England and to Europe to see my family more. But I love it here on the West Coast, and I love America, and it's an incredible land of opportunity and great people. And
Are the fans different from the UK and America?
only when you speak to them. You know what I mean? I mean, ultimately, music is universal, but yeah, not so different, not so different. I mean, I would say that maybe the South American audiences are the ones that we love, the crazy South American audiences. That power I do love, but you know, it's up to the performers and the bands to generate the energy at the shows, and so we've had great success in all places, and but I do particularly love Japan.
Yeah, exactly. And I was going to say that Japan audiences are a little different. I mean, they're very disciplined. They leave in an organized manner when they leave the venues, usually. And they're
I
also
heard this the
paying.
other day. You know this fact, the Japanese culture to me is just the greatest culture.
I lived there for 2 years.
Wow, I'm so lucky. I was reading the other day that there's Japanese practice that when you arrive, if you arrive early at work, you park the furthest away to allow the people that are late to come in and park close. And that just sums it up for me. It just sums it up. It's so thoughtful. I mean, the problem with the world, you could say, is that people don't care about other people enough. People are so selfish. But what a great culture to have that as a sort of just an MO, just a way that you should be. Beautiful, don't you
So
think? And
tell me about this new album, because you've got an album that's done.
yeah.
You just finished it. So I'm very interested to hear about the new album. Is it more of the same Bush sound, you know, heavy metal, hard rock that we've come to know, or?
Yeah, but apart, not, apart, I've just written a song yesterday that's really soft and very, very emotive. And so that's not hard at all. But it's just, I like the spirit of it. And going back to that, bucking the trend, going back to it, the idea is to make records that are sort of super aggressive emotionally. You know what I mean? Not like I'm not a screamer. No one's getting my records, I'm like screaming away. But it does get going. And if you, it's going to get your pulse racing, because I don't want to, I want to make sure that all the records we make from now on in until we finish are going to be spirited and full of energy and full of vibe. You know what I mean? And not phoning it in. So I done a new record. I thought, like, yeah, I, you know, I don't, you know, you don't care as much about or isn't quite as good. Because again, it goes back to the kids. Like you said about the being in a band together, like I would never do anything with it creatively. It's horrible. But I do want them to respect what I do. And I do want them to be, you know, and to be able to play their songs or have my song come on the radio when they're with their friends and not be embarrassed. Like, you know what I mean? If it was like crappy, you know, sorry, kids. So I want them, they're like, oh my God, it's amazing, Dad. You know, my son is 18. He saw my show, the loaded one. He's never said anything to me. He goes, oh my God, that show was amazing, Dad. Show was really amazing. Now I've waited so long for him to say that, because I haven't, I don't say, hey, do you like the show? I never ask people that stuff. But he's been limited with his praise, you know, and yet he loves all the rock, he loves all the bands. But I think I'm a blind spot for him because I'm his dad. So but he did like the show. So that was very thing. So anyway, new record is called I Beat Loneliness.
I Beat Loneliness. What was the inspiration of that title? Why did you pick that song, the title?
Because I think that everyone is struggling the whole time. And it's funny because when I reflect on the career that I've had and the songs that I've written, they do say that most people write one song over and over. And my theme that I've always dealt with is sort of, people's mental health and their feelings and the landscape of the landmines of hurt that we all live through, and everybody has so much broken stuff that they just sort of put the face on, go out and deal with it. But everybody having these crazy triggers, you know, you see that suicide rates are insane, suicides among the military, the ex-military. It's just men three times more likely to commit suicide as women. It's just people are hurting. And so my literal simple role in life, in that sort of Japanese concept of a vocation, is really writing songs about the human, about people and about feelings. And it's funny because when I began, it wasn't like that. You could just, I complain and in songs, but I always wanted to have this sort of sense of hope, this sense of help and support and, you know, close community and people and love and friendship and kindness. And so I've written like that. So I Beat Loneliness is just probably the best title I've ever written, because of course it's like, it's self-fulfilling in its in impossibility.
When's it coming out?
In the new year. Because you can't say you beat loneliness, because if you beat loneliness, it means that you're a really melancholic person who beat loneliness for about 20 minutes. And it's coming back the next day like a boomerang. So I just like that idea of that bravado. It's strength. It's not bravado. It's strength in the face of adversity.
What a thrill. This is a Grammy-nominated superstar, literally, you know, and it's 30 years into the business. And more than 9 albums out. They just finished a greatest hits tour. What's been the secret of the longevity for Bush? How have you guys kept it together for so long? Because, you know, look at Oasis. Look at a lot of these bands are fighting with each other and they break up and whatever. How have you kept it all together?
Because we like each other. And because I think as a band, we've grown as people, as musicians. And we haven't had any better ideas of outside of this being our main thing. You know, some bands, I think, you know, can be quite cynical in that thing of being on tour or being in a band when they are not friends and not happy with each other. You know, this sort of, they don't talk, and, you know, separate buses, separate this, separate that. And we can't roll with that. You know, I get along with them. We have a really great, I mean, listen, it's not like we don't need our space from each other. It's not like we don't, you know, but we just get along. I mean, I consider them my, if I have a problem, if I have stuff, nothing to do with music, I mean, I'm on the phone to them, you know.
Gavin Rossdale, what a pleasure it is to speak with you. A couple of questions. I know you got to go. There's another interview coming up for you. It's one of these days where it's one interview after another. And I did want to ask if you could collaborate with three artists, living or deceased, who would be at the top of Gavin Rossdale's wish list?
PJ Harvey, because I love her, and I love her, everything about her. And it was unfortunate because the other night she played in Los Angeles at the Greek, and someone advised me to go and have tickets, you know, and I didn't have anyone to help me look after my boys. So I was like, oh, I was really torn. So PJ Harvey would be one. I think that, yeah, you know, of course it'd be incredible to play with Prince, to work with Prince, play with Prince. And then on a final random rando kind of understanding, it would be someone like, let's think about this. I mean, I think it'd be so fun to do something wild with, write a song with James Hetfield, because he's got crazy riffs.
From Metallica. Wow, that would be
I
great.
Just thought of that. It came out of nowhere. I was just like, what
See?
Would be fun? What would be fun? And
well,
he'd be fun. He goes,
you don't be surprised if it happens.
Right.
You never know. Gavin Rossdale, what is the artwork on your arms? I've seen the artwork a couple of times. I want to.
Oh, just different things. Just
different things. How many tattoos do you have?
Stages in my life. A few. Bunch. I mean, I don't do legs. I don't like dudes with leg tattoos for me. I'm
Right.
not a leg guy. I didn't do my chest, so I've stumped back and arms and a bit of my neck.
Nothing on the face. Keep it off the face.
Yeah, not the money maker. Yeah, I don't know.
That's it.
I'm not into that. I'm not into that. And I'm also not into it being so covered. For me, it's the combination of my skin and the tattoo. Some people like to be completely covered, and it's a beautiful thing when people, it's so deep. I mean, there's obviously the sailors that get it when they're drunk and they get mum on their arm. But to me, it's quite a deep experience. It's funny. It's like when you have a lot of pain in your life, to get a tattoo, you localize the pain. You know, when people do cutting or some of those kind of things. So people with tattoos are very sensitive people. And I think it's usually like, it's about, you have a lot of pain in your life, but yet when you sit there and you get a tattoo, it's so painful on a local level. Like,
Oh,
6 hours.
yeah. Especially when you have big, intricate work like you get.
On the inside, on the
Ooh.
outside of your arms, there's nothing.
That hurts. Oh, here,
outside.
that hurts.
Oh, it's so brutal. So what happens, I think, is it's quite a moving. It's a transcendental experience. And you go through that, and it alleviates the pain you're thinking about in your life, and you focus it in one area, and then that area becomes a sort of a source of strength. It's very deep. So like my son was saying on the holiday we went, and my sisters came, and they had daughter, he says to me, we're gonna get matching tattoos. I was like, no, you can't. No matching tattoos. This is not folly. This is like, if you're gonna scar your skin, because your body takes it as a scar, if you're gonna scar yourself, do it for the right reasons. Don't get a pineapple on your ankle.
Well, I know you're going to, you know, the new album's coming out around the beginning of the year. You said it's an inspirational album, kind of drawing people together, helping people get through their problems. And I read somewhere you talk a lot about politics, and you talk about how divided, you know, the United States is, let alone the world, with two wars going on and whatnot. So, I mean, would you consider yourself to be politically influenced in your writing?
I mean, I've always had political elements in there, but my trick, my party trick, has always been to personalize them, and not. And I mean, it's not for me to get onto a side or tell. I've never been in a situation of telling what people should do. So I think it's more like suggestive. And my politics, I don't feel that it's right to put my ideas down people's throats. I do think that it's good to reference things in there. You know, I reference after Charlottesville and the rally where the person was killed by the guy driving into the rally, beginning of the Black Lives Matter. You know, I've had Bomb on the very first record. 16 Stone was written about the IRA and the Protestant thing, but only in the context of someone going shopping and they wanted to buy shiny red things. I thought I'd be with you until the end. And this bomb goes off. I grew up around, there were bombs when I was growing up, you know, going off in London between the IRA. I lived in an area where you'd have to see the Protestant, the Orange Day parade. So you'd see the Protestants, you'd see the Biddy Mulligans, which was a famous IRA pub. When we were kids, we'd go in there to play Space Invaders and stuff. But it's really heavy, you know, like we were kids, 12, 13 years old, sneaking in to play the machines. But those were heavy pubs. You couldn't go in there unless you were IRA. So I've had that in my DNA. And so, but in terms of like now, for instance, in America, all I have said a lot is, this is the beauty of music, that it transcends politics. Because I will have people at the show who believe one way, and I will have people at my show who believe the other way. There's common sense in the middle. There is common sense in the middle where everyone has a logic. But you know, when it gets really cynical and it's self-serving for the idea of the party versus the actual thing they're talking about, that's where it kind of. That's where it loses me. You know, you can't just be blindly one thing or the other. It really is, should be issue driven what you do. And
Where can people get the new album? How can they? I mean, I'm sure Amazon, iTunes, everywhere that you can
well,
buy music.
I gotta finish it first. I gotta mix it, and then press it. So it will be, I think, early next year, you
Early next year. That's great. That's excellent. And
know.
for the benefit of our worldwide audience, of which there's 350 million people in 100 countries, and the military who are tuned in, I want to give you a chance to send a shout out, to send your message to the people.
Okay, well, to all the men and women around the world keeping us safe, we thank you for your service, first off. And I had such a good time playing in Okinawa at the Marine Corps base that I hope to do more. And I saw the promoter recently. I was like, what's up with the one show? I want to go, you know, give it to Germany. So I hope that we'll be doing those shows for the great people of the military.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Gavin, for being on the show today. Like I say, it's a thrill to have you on the program. I've tried for years. I'm so happy to finally have a chance to chat with you. And thank you for giving up some of your time. Nine albums in, a tenth on the way. It's quite a great career you've had. And if people want to find out more about you and read up, where do they go? What's your
Yeah, go to
socials?
my come to my Instagram, Gavin Rossdale. It's very straightforward. I'll try to tell you everything I know. And people can, you know, write me there.
All right. Well, thank you. Gavin Rossdale's our guest. He's had quite a few big hits. I mean, Rolling Stone magazine said early on that the 16 Stone, the first album, was one of the 40 greatest albums ever. He's had a number one hit almost every decade that he's been doing this, at least one number one, and continues to tour to this day. So if Bush comes to a venue near you internationally, and I assume you're going to take it on the road as well, because this Loaded Greatest Hits was a U.S. tour.
Yeah, that's what we're looking at for the summer. You know, that's what we're making the plans, always trying.
Thank you very much, Gavin, for joining us. This is Border Crossings, and you're watching VOA TV.